Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nozir Daf Samach Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins the second line from the top of Daf Samach Beis Omer Aleph. Before we begin the actual shiur, we glance at the side where we have a structural note we call the Mivneh. A double underline is featured. It's one of our series markings. And what we've attempted to do on this Omid is highlight Havlotas Hapsukim Shidroshu. That's the Havlotas is to highlight the Psukim that Shidroshu that will be expounded upon by the Tirush Baal Peh here in the Gemara. The Girsa that we have from the Gro, he takes out the first two words in the middle of the line that you can see we have parentheses around, indicating that we're not tying this drosha into what we had in our previous shiur, but for those who recall, we had a drosha featuring the word ish in the context of Erichin versus Nazirus. So we continue now with questions regarding the necessity of having certain additional psukim. The Gemara. Ish ki yafli neder be'erkecha be'erichin lomali. This is a posuk in Vayikra, Perek Chav Zayin, posuk Beis, which is a section of the Torah dedicated to the Erechin type pledge. We've already explained in the past several times what Erechin is, so you recognize the word by now. So the Erechin type pledge has this posuk in it. Ish ki afli neder be'erkecha. Why do I have to have that posuk? Which essentially translates as a man when he vows to give an erichin dedication. Michti, ha iskish erichin l'nedarim. We know elsewhere that erichin is compared to nedarim, diomakra. In fact, I say elsewhere, but specifically in this very pasuk, you see that erichin is compared to nedarim. It says ish ki yafli neder berkecha. So in the pasuk here, we see Erechin are compared to Nedorim. V'hotanya, Gabi Nedorim, and we've learned by Nedorim, Ish. The word Ish appears. Ma Talmud Lomar Ish, L'rabos es ha'ev de kechovim, Shehen noidrim, Nedorim, Unedovos, Kabi Yisrael. In the topic of Nedorim, of vows, from the word Ish, we have learned that Gentiles, like Jews, can dedicate sacrifices to the Beis HaMikdash. So once we know that Erechin are compared to Nedarim, why does the Pasuk spell out Ish ki yafli be'erechin lomali? The idea being that the expression Ish Kiafli would seem to indicate that Gentiles are part of the mitzvah, the part of the section of the Torah dealing with Erechin dedications. So the expression Ish Kiafli would seem to be superfluous if its purpose is to include Gentiles in Erechin dedications. Ela, The Gemara answers, and you'll notice we have a new marking, a trapezoid or volcano shape, which is featured on the side of our Gemara. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give and take, with the narrow part facing up. These are responses, and the inverted version represents questions. So, Elo, hi ish, miboyale, the ish, by the posuk an erichin of ish ki afli neder be'erkecha le'suye, to include mufla samuch le'ish, to include a person 1 year before their official adulthood, that if they vow, their vows are binding. We've discussed mufla samuch le'ish earlier in this masechta, and we see it here again, so that we're including what is officially a minor, because he hasn't reached bar mitzvah, but he's 1 year, any vows that he makes within the year prior to bar mitzvah would be binding. Well, ha'nicha l'manda amar mufla samach li'ish toraisa. This approach works according to that school of thought that says that vows made by a mufla samach li'ish, a person within the year prior to his adulthood, the vows are binding, is Torah based. And here we would have the Torah source for that. El lamanda mar derabonan, but according to the opinion that says it is merely rabbinic, ish ki afli lamali, so then what's the role of this Torah verse, ish ki afli? What is its purpose? Answer, Lasuye mufla somuch li'ish da'ove kechavim. It comes to include that not only, as we had learned before, that Gentiles are capable of vowing sacrifices and making binding vows and oaths, this pasuk comes to include a Gentile a year before his adulthood. Mufla samuch li'ish means that age that by a Jew we say he vows but is rabbinic, that same age by a Gentile would be Torah binding. Now Rashi raises the issue, does that not seem strange that by Jews we are, we'll say, lenient in so far as mufla samuch li'ish being only rabbinic, and when it comes to the Gentiles, we impose a greater level of seriousness, of stringency to that. So Rashi says that there is precedent in the Torah for such approaches. And you can look into the Rashi to see more on that topic. Well, we continue. Ha'nicha l'mandomer b'nei Yisrael ne'erochin v'ein ha'ovdei k'chava ne'erochin. This approach to include the Gentile as being capable of vowing, and his vows are binding on a Torah level, not only the adult Gentile, but even mufla samuch li'ish, works out well according to this approach that says B'nei Yisrael, Jews, are the subject of Erechin vows, and Gentiles are not the subject of Gentile vows. Yochaloyu Ma'arichin, could it be that they don't initiate an Erech type vow? Talmud Lomar Ish. So the word Ish that you find by Nidorim, according to Rashi, includes adult Gentiles, and Erechin are compared to Nidorim. So just like by Nidorim, Gentile vows are binding, so too their Erech type vow is binding, where they initiate the pledge. We're not elaborating too much here, because we've dealt in recent Shurim with these concepts of Ne'erochim being the subject of an Erech, and Ma'arichim being the initiator of an Erech. So we're saying that the approach of including mufla samuch li'ish of oivei kechavim as being the subject of the pasuk works out according to this approach that says that Gentiles themselves are able to initiate an erech type vow, and that we learn from ish and the fact is, Shapir, as the Gemara says, Shapir means it works out well that we can say that Ish Kiyafli by Erechin includes the Mufla Samoch Leish. Elo Lamandi Omar Bnei Yisrael Marichin Ve'ein Ha'ovde Kechovim Marichin. But according to another approach that we see, when it comes to the realm of Erechin, Jews can initiate an Erech pledge, Gentiles cannot. Yochol lo yu nerochim, would it be that Gentiles are not the subject of an Erech vow? Talmud lomar ish. Ish says that Gentiles are the subject of an Erech vow. If a Jew says, I want to give the Erech of such and such a Gentile, we evaluate his gender and his age, and we say that the vow is binding. Well, when you say ish, and you're talking about being the subject of an Erech vow, afilu tinok ben chodesh bar iruchi hu, even an infant of 1 month old is in the parsha, in the section dealing with Erech and being the subject of an Erech. So, ish kiafli, the ish kiafli posuk by Erechin, lomali. What is it left to include? To suggest that it's going to include, let's say, a young Gentile as being the subject of an Erech vow. I don't need ish kiafli of Erechin for that purpose. That was already learned from the ish that we mentioned earlier, another pasuk. So what do I need ish kiafli for? Answer: Omar Rav Ado Barava, Lesuye Oive Kechovim Godol. Now here we have a tricky word. Lesuye really means to exclude. To exclude the case of an Oive Kechovim Godol, an adult Gentile, the Afagav the Godol who, even though he is an adult, im eino yodea lahaflois lo. If he doesn't know to whom one is bound when he makes a vow, in other words, that he vows to bring a sacrifice, he's vowing to bring to the Almighty a gift. If he's not aware of that, then his vows would not be binding. This, by the way, is in contrast to a Jew. Once he reaches adulthood, even if he's not aware of this element of vow making, namely yafli, haflo'o, the idea that a vow is a vow to the Almighty, nevertheless, in the case of a Jew, it's binding. So that the role of this posuk of ish ki afli by Erechin tells me this, will say this distinction, that an adult Gentile who is unaware of to whom he is vowing, his vow will not be binding. Now we continue with a new drosha. Elo ki yafli de kosav rachmona gabi nezirus lomali. What do I need the ki yafli posuk that you find written in the Torah in the parsha of nezirus? Michti hoyiskish nezirus lenedorem ki yafli lomali. The rules of nezirus are compared to the rules of Nidorim. So I would know whatever this is telling me by Nazirus from the rules that apply to Nidorim. What do I gain from having this posuk of Ki Yafli by Nazirus? The Gemara answers, La Suye, and we have a new marking. You can see a house shape which will appear in alternating directions, again, a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take style of the Gemara. The point facing up represents tshuvos, responses. The inverted house, kushya, a question. So you're asking, what does ki yafli that's written by Nazirus come to include? Answer, lasuya yodayim sheinon mochichos. It's coming to tell me the law concerning a vow that is stated in, we'll say, in an abbreviated fashion, A yad is a type of, we'll say, partial statement. Like when you pick up a vessel and you grab it by the handle as opposed by the vessel itself, you're grabbing just a part of it, but thereby moving the whole vessel. The term yadayim then is a reference to something that's partial. In this case, we have a partial statement that's not absolutely clear. That's called yadayim she'enon mochichos. And nevertheless, we're going to see there is an opinion that said it's binding. De'itmar yadayim she'enon mochichos. Abai omar havyun yadayim. Abai says it's considered a legitimate partial statement that is binding. And rov amar lo havyun yadayim. Partial statements that are not absolutely clear what you're referring to, nevertheless, are binding. Rashi gives us examples of yodayim she'enon mochichos by nazirus and by vows in general. You can see this in the Rashi, five lines from the bottom. In the case of nazirus, if a person says ahei, and we've learned at the very beginning of this masichta, a person who says ahei means I will be, and it's speaking under circumstances that a nazir is walking in front of him, is passing by. So you have a partial statement. He doesn't say ahei nazir, he just says I will be. Well, it could be I'll be fasting. It's not a clear statement. Combined with the fact, though, that a nazir is walking by, we say it's binding. By vows, by nidorim, if a person would say mudrani mimcha, mudrani from Lord Neder, I'm removing pleasure from you. I'm removing myself from being a source of pleasure to you. Now, mudrani mimcha could mean he vows not to speak to him, but we say that is not what it is going to result in. It means that it's a real vow that pleasure, all kinds of pleasure, are now being prohibited. So we have examples of yodayim shei mochichos. Abai says they are binding. Rava says they're not binding. But this leads us into a problem. La abaye nicha ela la rava ma'ikol ameimar. According to Abaye, so we have found a role for the ki yafli pasuk that you find by nazirus, communicating the idea that yodayim shein mochichos are binding. Ela, but according to Rava, ela la rava ma'ikol ameimar, what is ki yafli, that pasuk that you find by nazirus, what is its role? Ela ki yafli miboyalei chilir bitarfen. Rava will tell you that ki yafli is needed for bitarfen's teaching. Disanya. Now here we have a Tanaic source, but it requires a little bit of background, and that is that you have two people walking along, and one says, "I will be a nazir." I say two people. You can have a group of people actually walking along, and one says, "I will be a nazir if that image appearing from the distance is so and so," and a second guy says, "I will be a nazir if it's not so and so," and a third guy says, "I will be a nazir if neither of you will be is correct," and the fourth guy says, "I'll be a nazir if both of you are correct," and so on and so forth. We have learned this in the past. So in that context, we have this brisa that says, "Reb Yehuda Omer Mishum Rebbi Tarfon." Reb Yehuda says, "In the name of Rebbi Tarfon, Ein Echod Mehem Nazir. None of those people are nazirim." Nazirus, the acceptance of a Nazirus vow, is only under circumstances of clarity. And in the example we cited, you had an image appearing from in the distance whose identity was not clear to any of those assembled in our story. So therefore, Rabbi Tarfon says, since it's a vow, but stated under uncertain conditions, it's conditional that it turns out to be so and so. At the time of the vow, though, there wasn't clarity. Lack of clarity is, in effect, non-haflaw. Haflaw meaning a statement made with clarity, with certainty. So we understand that the posuk ki afli, that's stated by Nazirus, teaches me Rabbi Tarfon's point. Well, there are those that disagree with Rabbi Tarfon, and in the story that we gave, all those people saying, I will be a Nazir if it's so-and-so, I'll be a Nazir if it's not so-and-so, etc. The Rabbanan say they're all Nazirim, they're all obligated to observe Nazirus. So, what's the role of Ish Ki Yafli by Nazir? What does that Pasuk teach me? Elo mi boyele lichiditanya. It will be used for the following information that's contained in this source. It says, Heter nidorim porchin ba'avir ve'en lahem almashi yismochu. The concept of absolution of vows literally is flying in the air. And what do we mean it's flying in the air? It doesn't have any solid scriptural reference. Nothing, let's say, blatant or explicit appears in the Torah regarding the power of absolving vows. Reb Lezer Omer Yesh Lamash Amashi Yismochu. Reb Lezer disagrees and says we have psukim that indicate the institution of vow absolution. Shenemar Ish Ki Yafli. Ki Yafli. Tosfos points out that we're really not emphasizing the word Ish, but we're emphasizing the fact that the Ki Yafli appears Shtei Pa'omim, once by Nozir and once by Nedorim. And what do these psukim tell us? Echon Haflo Le'isur, the Echon Haflo Le'heter. There are Haflo, I mean pronouncing of vows, that remain prohibited, meaning that you can't undo, you can't absolve the nether because there is no expression of regret on the one who made the nether. On the other hand, you have haflo leheter, meaning vows that were taken that are absolved because the vow taker did express his feelings of remorse, of harota. So that you see that the appearance of the word ki yafli indicates that there is vow absolution, and the double appearance of this expression in the Torah, according to Rabbi Lezer, indicates that if there is an expression of remorse, then the sage who absolves vows can, in fact, absolve the client of his vow, and if he doesn't express remorse or harota, then it cannot be absolved. We now continue on Omid Beis, the new Mishnah. Chomer ba'avodim mi'benoshim. There are stringencies that are applicable to slaves, more so than by women, of course, in the realm of vows. Shu mefer nidre ishto, v'eino mefer nidre avdo. The husband undoes his wife's vows, and he doesn't fully undo his slave's vows. Hofer liishto, hofer olomis. And here you'll see the chumrah by vows when it comes to slaves. If one absolves the wife of a vow, it's a permanent absolution, meaning that in the event that she gets divorced or she becomes an almona, whatever vow she had taken while she was married and the husband absolved it, it's gone. Hofer la'avdo, yotza l'cherus sumash naziruso. If a slave had vowed to be a nazir and then was released from his servitude, the Eved now, though it was the vow was objected to during his servitude, but now he's become a free man, he must observe, if we're talking about a vow of Nazirus, he must observe Nazirus now that he's free from his master. Let us learn the Rashi together. We're going to learn the Rashi together with the Nuskhas Harivan that you see in the margin of the Gemara. So we start with Rashi on the top. Chomer ba'avodim mi'benoshim shumefer nidre ishto. And we now look at the Rivan together. Shetzorach lahafir l'neder ishto. Avolo l'nidre avdo. A husband, if he doesn't want the vow of his wife to be binding, he must absolve it. A slave that makes a vow, the master doesn't have to absolve it. He doesn't have to protest it. Calls man shu tachtov v'lo yotze lecherus. As long as he is in servitude and hasn't gone free, the vow is inconsequential. V'ezu chomer b'avodim. Where then do you see a stringency by avodim? And now we continue in the text above, in the Rashi itself. So where do you see a stringency manifest by slaves more so than by women? If a master absolved the wife of a vow, it's permanently removed. And even if she becomes a widow or is divorced, whatever Nazirus she had accepted when she was married, since the husband acted swiftly and absolved her of the vow, it's gone. Avo bavodim eino kein. But when it comes to slaves and a parallel scenario, it's not the same law. Shekevon sheyotze lecherus mashlim nazirus shekibel lav. A slave that had vowed to be a nazir, and the owner had protested that vow, but once he goes free, he, the slave, must observe the Nazirus. And he must start a counting of Nazirus from the beginning. And if, while in servitude, he had vowed to be a Nazir and counted some of the days, he makes up the balance now that he is free. Because the protest of the owner does not constitute a total erasure or voidance of that vow. So there you see a element of stringency by slaves over women, as the Mishnah began. Now we turn to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Lima Rabo Kofo. With regard to what does a master force? L'nazirus. At this point it means that if a slave had vowed to be a nazir, the owner can force him to drink wine. Avoloi l'nidorim l'erachin. However, a master cannot force his slave with regard to vows. Some gersos have, instead of l'erachin, as v'lo l'shvuos, cannot force with regard to vows or oaths. The Gemara asks, "My shna gabi nozir. What is different about nozir that the master can force? Yomar achmona lesor isor al nafsho." The pasuk says regarding the realm of vows or oaths, it says, "Lesser Yisrael nafsho, one who accepts restrictions upon himself, but misha nafsho knuyoloi, someone who is in charge of himself, so someone who owns himself, yotza eved she'ein nafsho knuyolo, to the exclusion of a slave who is not in control of himself." Well, if that is what is the basis for the master forcing his slave with regard to nazirus, ihachi afilu nedarim nami, then the same should apply to vows as well. The pasuk of les or isor al nafsho is not a pasuk that's limited to nazirus. It's a pasuk that's written in the context of vows, and nazirus is compared to vows. So if you're telling me that in nazirus the master can force because the slave is not in control of himself, likewise in the case of general vows that a slave takes, they should not be binding. So we must figure out what are the circumstances that the owner can absolve or protest the nazirus of his slave and not with regard to nedarim. So we have a series marking a triangle is used. You can see on the side we have a nosei, mivne, heading. Chubos lahasbir lama odon kaife es avde rak benozir velo b'shar nedorim. So we're trying to understand this idea. Why only by nazirus does a master kofe force and not by Nedarim or Shavuos. Omar Rav Sheshes, Hocha b'mayaskinon, the circumstances of this source are very limited. Kagon she'eshkel shel anova munach lefonav. We're talking about a case where there is a cluster of grapes lying in front of the slave. Gabi Nedarim, the chimitzar b'hai lo mitzar b'achrini. In the case of vows, if the slave vows, he takes a neder, uses an expression that indicates a vow, not nezirus, but a vow, that he's not going to eat this cluster of grapes. So the result of that vow is that that particular cluster of grapes is prohibited, but other clusters of grapes are not prohibited, and therefore lo motzi kofile. The master can't force him to eat that particular cluster of grapes. As far as the effectiveness of a slave to serve as a slave, he will be effective anyway. Because if you'll say, well, he needs the grapes to give him strength to work, he'll be able to work because he'll be able to eat other clusters of grapes. So there's no basis for the master to intervene. Gabi Nezirus, however, when it comes to the vow of Nezirus, the chimitzar b'hayitzer b'kuhu, if he says he's going to be a nozir with regard to this cluster of grapes, the result of such a statement is that he becomes a nozir with regard to all grapes and all wine products, and as such, then he might not be able to serve as an effective slave with that general prohibition upon him. Motzi kofile, therefore, the master has the right, has the power to force him to consume the grapes and grape products, because otherwise it's going to be to the detriment of the owner having a weak slave. Question: the gabi nedarim mi lo askinon deleke lo hayeshkol. In the case of nedarim, when we speak about the power or lack thereof of a master to protest, are we not also including a scenario where there is only one cluster of grapes? Di lo ochil le cholish. If the slave doesn't eat that cluster, there are no other grapes in the vicinity. None whatsoever. If he doesn't eat this, he'll become weak. He'll become weak. The master's going to lose out. He'll have a weak slave, not capable of performing his role as a servant. Why then would the source indicate that the master cannot force him to eat the cluster? Elo Omar Abaye, Kagoin Shohoya Hartson Munach Lefonov. The scenario described above is there is grape seeds lying in front of them. Now, grape seeds are not quite edible. They're not, under extreme circumstances, a person might munch on them to give himself a little strength, but that's their nature. And so you have a plateful of Hartson in front of the slave. Gabi Nedarim, if he vows not to eat this plateful of grape seeds, Bahayu de Mitzar, lo motzi kofile, he's restricting himself only from that plateful. Others, he'll be able to eat. So you won't have a weakened slave on your hands. Therefore, the master can't protest. Gabi Nozir, the Itzar Nami Bachrini, in the case of Nazirus, if a person says, I'm going to be a Nozir from the Hartzon, he, in effect, is prohibiting himself from all Hartzon. He's, in fact, prohibiting himself from everything that a Nozir is prohibited from. And if that results, if that would take hold, if that would be binding, then you've got a slave in a weakened state. He needs these for his energy supply. Therefore, motzi kofile, the master has a right to force him to violate nezirus, because the slave doesn't have the right to impose detriment on his master. Question. The Gabi Nidora Milo Askino Deleke Elohai Chartzon the Lo Ochile Cholish. Very similar to the question we had above with the Eshkol, with the cluster of grapes. In the case of the Nidorim, are we not also describing or taking into consideration a case where there is only that one plateful of Chartzon and none other? And if he doesn't eat this plateful, he'll become weak? And yet, it says above that the master cannot force him with regard to Nidorim. Elo Omar Rova. Now here we have a big turnaround in terms of, we'll say, approach. Yes, there is a distinction between Nazirus and Nidorim, but it's kind of like in the opposite direction or way of thinking. Loma Raboy Tsorech Lichfosil Nazirus, V'ein Tsorech Lichfosil Nidorim, V'ein Tsorech Lichfosil Shvua, my taimo. Why is it that when it comes to a slave that accepted Nazirus on himself, do we say that if the master doesn't want it to be binding, he better protest it? When it comes to vows and oaths, they don't get started at all. My time, well, why is that? The Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, Lahara Lahetiv, in the case of vows and oaths in general, the words lahora leitiv appear. Ma hatova reshus af haro reshus. The vow has to be that kind of vow that, just like to do, we'll say the positive is something optional. It must be that kind of vow where the reverse would also be an option. Yotze lahora lacherim sheino reshus biado, to the exclusion of a vow which involves creating detriment to others. Like our case, a slave who vows and the result of the vow would be causing loss to his master, a vow that would create a weakened slave, that's loss to his master. The Torah doesn't allow or provide for vows like that to be binding. So that when it comes to vows and oaths that would be a loss to, that would result in a loss to the owner doesn't have to bother protesting. But when it comes to Nazirus, and this you see in the Meforshim, you see Rashi points this out, that there's a Gzeres HaKosuv, and we've seen this Gzeres HaKosuv in the past. It says, V'omarto Aleihem. That Posuk, V'omarto Aleihem, comes to include slaves in Nazirus. And from that we learn that if the master protests, so then the slave's Nazirus is voided. If the master does not protest, then it takes hold. So that is therefore the pshat, the explanation of the source above, which made a contrast between Nazirus on the one hand, Nidorim, and Shavuos on the other hand. The Mishnah. We have a topic heading on the side. The Nosei is Eved Shenozar Uborach Meirabo, a slave that vowed to be a Nozir, and he ran away from his master. We'll see a Machlokes Tanoim, Im muter loy lishtois yayin. Is he permitted to drink wine? The Mishnah. Ovar mikeneged ponov. Literally, the slave passed from being in front of his master, which means the slave that had vowed to be a nazir escaped. Rabbi Meir Melo Yishtet, Rabbi Meir says he's bound, he cannot drink wine. Rabbi Yossi Oimer Yishtet, he is to drink wine. Lema b'dishmuel komifligi. Can we say that the machlokes Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi is based on a principle of Shmuel, whether or not to accept Shmuel's principle? The Omar Shmuel, Hamafkir Avdoi, Yetzei Lecherus Ve'ein Tzorach Get Shechor. Shmuel says that an owner of a slave that declares the slave unowned, he's mafkir, his eved. The slave becomes a free man, and he doesn't even need the document of freedom. Get shichur. The term get, you're familiar with in the case of a man divorcing his wife. A divorce document. In the case of an owner setting his slave free, there is an equivalent document called a get shichur. However, Shmuel says, if a master declares his slave unowned, the slave is free and doesn't even require this document. Is this halacha accurate or binding? Is it to be accepted? Rabbi Meir Yisle de Shmuel. Rabbi Meir said in the Mishnah that the slave who escaped is not to drink wine. Why is he not to drink wine? Well, because we hold by Shmuel, this slave is now free. He doesn't even need a get shichur. He's free now. And we indicated before, when we learned the previous mission at the top of this omit, that when a slave becomes his own boss, so the nazirus that he had accepted while in servitude now becomes binding. So Rabbi Meir, who said that the slave shall not drink, it's because the nazirus is binding. Why is the nazirus binding? Because he's not in the control of his master. Why is he not in the control of his master? Well, based on accepting Shmuel. Rabbi Yossi less lay de Shmuel. Rabbi Yossi, who says, nah, the slave continues drinking, he doesn't hold from Shmuel. And the protest of his master while he was still a slave is still binding. Lo, the analysis that we just suggested to explain the machlokes Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yossi is not the way to go. De kulei almo yislu de Shmuel. Everyone, all the Tanoim, would agree with Shmuel that someone who is mafkir, his eved, one who formally declares his slave unowned, in such a case, so he's truly unowned, and he would be absolutely restricted from drinking wine. He's now his own boss, and his previous Nazirus vow is now binding. But in our Mishnah, we didn't actually have a case of mafkir. We didn't have a formal declaration of non-ownership. We had an effort that simply ran away from his master. Eloman diomar yishter Rabbi Yossi, who says that this slave who's now run away should drink. Sovar self mehado hodar v'yossi gabe. He's going to come back. At some point, the slave is going to go back to his master. Lishti chamro ki echi delo likush. He should therefore drink wine now so that on the day that he goes back, he won't be in a weakened state. He'll be capable of working. So Rabbi Yossi is concerned with the welfare of the master. Therefore, we want that slave who has run away to, in the meantime, drink wine. So when he comes back, he'll be fit as a fiddle. Ulamad yamalo yishtet. According to Rabbi Meir, who says, oh, the slave that's run away should not drink. Sovaleve late sorrow. Let him feel the pain of not drinking, the pain of restriction. Ki hechi delahader gabe. So that will motivate him to go back to the master. And as a servant in the domain of his master, he'll need to drink the wine. So that the lack of drinking right now, the prohibition of drinking right now, will actually be a motivating factor for him to go back to his master. And as Rashi says at the end, both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir are governed or concerned with the welfare of the owner. How to achieve that in the best way? So you see, Rabbi Yossi has his opinion and Rabbi Meir has his opinion, but on a fundamental level, they're both interested in the benefit to the owner. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.